When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So I'm violating protocol by not saying, hello, everybody. Welcome to Screen Talk. I'm Ann Thompson.
And I'm Ryan Latanzio.
So Ryan, you're back from Sundance. You actually didn't get COVID. Everyone else at Underwire appears to have gotten it.
I did not. My unwellness was just a more generalized malaise than actual COVID.
And we are going to go over some of the Sundance stuff. We did a poll. We did an actual poll of a critics poll. And it was very interesting that it returned results that were unusual, rare, unexpected. A huge, huge, huge gap between the first movie that everybody picked, that everybody voted for, and everything else. And that movie was A Real Pain, which was the first movie I put up on the portal to see. It was the most urgently necessary movie for me to watch. And I loved it. I loved it and voted it very highly as well. It was a very well-written, well-directed, well-acted gem of a movie. I couldn't have been happier with it.
And this was the first big acquisition out of the festival. Searchlight bought it for $10 million. Netflix sort of trounced that figure later by buying this horror movie out of the midnight section. It's What's Inside for, I believe, $17 million. But A Real Pain, which I saw in person at the Eccles, did feel like the first sort of awards contender. I don't know if that's going to manifest as Oscars, but it does seem like something that will pop up later at the Gothams, the Spirits. This is Jesse Eisenberg's second movie as a director, literally going to
the land of his forebears.
That's right, to a concentration camp. I'm not setting this up well, because it's actually like a very funny comedy that takes a sort of darker turn about this group of people on a tour of, on a Holocaust tour.
And the person who could be the Oscar nominee is Kieran Culkin.
And that would make sense. He just had such a huge year.
He was so good. It's an interesting thing. I mean, we know how good he was on Succession. But that doesn't mean he's going to be really good in every other movie that he does. And he read the script over and over, tried to talk himself out of it. This was in his interview with us. And finally decided that there was nothing wrong with the script and that he had to play the part. And he nailed it. It's a disturbed, unhappy guy who is always acting out in various ways inside the group and with his cousin, played by Jesse Eisenberg, someone that Jesse's character loves but hates at the same time, as explained in a great scene. It's a remarkable job that Eisenberg did and Culkin delivered.
And, also I'll say in that movie, there's a really great supporting role from Jennifer Grey, who we don't see very often. And of course, it takes you a minute to sort of situate on who exactly it is you're looking at, even all these years later, as one of the women on the tour who kind of has a spark with the Kieran Culkin character. I really liked her turn in the movie.
Well, she's exactly what we all recognize, that older woman who's still got it, who's, not with a man anymore and is looking.
Cougar adjacent.
She looks great. She looks great, Jennifer Grey. Beyond that movie, there were many, 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 many others that were more divisive, obviously. Not everybody agreed on, say, Exhibiting Forgiveness, which, if I had to pick a Art Heals Trauma movie, of which there were many, I would pick Ghostlight over Exhibiting Forgiveness, which has a lot of merit by the way. Very good acting, especially.
I'm very bummed that I didn't see Ghostlight, but I did watch Exhibiting Forgiveness at home. The Andre Holland performance is very good.
Yes, it is.
There is just, this is a, this was a trend at the festival. Movies about trauma, movies about healing, everything's about trauma. And I did feel overwhelmed by it. And I think even a, a lay viewer would feel the same way. In Exhibiting Forgiveness, he's an artist who is, his abusive father comes back into his present. He hasn't seen him in, I think, 15 years. And the father is seeking redemption for his behaviors as a drug addict when Andre Holland was a kid. It's a very heavy movie and
He was more of a toxic,
long.
overwhelming dad, who didn't take care of his son, made him work, made him do things that he shouldn't have had to do as a child. Anjanue Ellis is very good also in this as the mother, who let it happen and still loved the father no matter what he did, no matter when or where he showed up. So
This
there's a lot to like about that movie. It's just I'm with you. It in the writing, I would say it was heavy-handed for me.
Yes, I agree. And that's one that may had some inclusion in our poll. Interestingly, no, I think less heavy, but what didn't come, what was not in the top 10 of the critics that we polled for the survey was the Grand Jury Prize winner In the Summers, which also won the Best Directing Award. They gave everything to this movie that I think I
Did you
saw
see
before the
this one?
festival. I've seen it and it's fine. It's, you can tell, it's one of those movies that you can tell. I mean, God bless it, but you can tell that it's a very low budget movie because there's not any, there's no extras in the scenes. The set is very bare. This is not to hold anything against it. It just that kind of stuck out to me. It's about two girls who, over the years, their father, who's played by Residente, who's this, hugely famous Latin American singer. And so I feel like it hasn't been bought yet, but someone will buy it because of interest in him. He is also a father seeking redemption because he was very shitty when his kids were younger. And the movie centers on all of the summers over the years when they come, they live with their mother full time, but they come and stay with him in New Mexico and Las Cruces every summer. And so the movie is, I think, I believe it's 4 summers that it takes place in over the years. It's just fine. It's a small, sort of sweet movie. I, to be honest, I don't know how to put this, but it's there are elements of it that sort of typify the sort of the Sundance movie as we know it. It's, it's coming of age. It's sort of very celebratory about identity. It's all of these things that you think of a Sundance movie being. I'm a little shocked that it won both of these prizes, considering that actually the dramatic competition was very strong this year. You saw Dee Dee, which Focus features just bought, another coming of age story, but that was
Yeah, I
very
think Sean
good.
Wong was definitely the breakout talent of the festival and also was nominated for an Oscar for his short,
That's
which
right.
is Disney Plus short. So he there's a we did a story on him that you can read. He's the talent of the moment.
I think that movie, finds the right audience, will find an adoring audience.
A
It
young
really,
audience.
yeah, a young audience. And it's set in 2008. The kid who's Taiwanese American, it's his last summer before high school in Southern California. It really, as someone who was around that age, well, I was 18 in 2008, but it really transports you to the age of the early days of Facebook, all the time spent on AOL Instant Messenger, just like the excruciating, just everything, all the exchanges that happen at AIM that are so painful, just sort of really tangling with all of the pratfalls and pitfalls of adolescence in a way that it really moved me. But it's also, it's sweet, but it's not cloying. It's very frank and honest about sort of the darker realities of betrayal when it comes to forging new friendships as you're going into high school and abandoning the ones that you have held close to you for so long.
Let's just say I'm not the target audience.
Again, like just in summation here, it just there was a lot of good material in the dramatic competition, and sort of surprised that one of these other movies, like this film Good One, I don't know if you saw that, directed by India Donaldson, very strong first feature. sort of Kelly Reichert-esque. Maybe Deborah Granik didn't like that one because it's similar to Leave No
It was
Trace in a
very
way that it's
much like
about,
her movie.
yes, it's about a daughter and a father in the woods. So maybe she had a bias against it or something. She was on the jury.
No, and I really liked the Kristen Stewart, Steven Yeun, AI movie, The Love Story. Love me.
I did
That was
too.
fantastic. I
Everybody
know, I
hated that
loved
on the
it.
ground.
I really?
No.
What really?
Yeah,
It got some good reviews.
it was not, well, I don't know. People looked at me like I was insane when I said that I liked it. But again, sort of the day before I saw Freaky Tales, which you know made me put a hate in my heart. And so the bar was very low. Anything could have cleared it. And so that was the movie that I saw the next day, and I had a good time.
Yeah, no, I really liked that one. But again, as usual, I have to lay on a caveat that having not gone in person, I didn't see as many movies as many people did. But I did binge quite a bit for a good 5 days on the portal. So the docs are very strong, and they're back this year. And I picked 10 possible Oscar contenders, and I had to leave off a couple of good ones.
There were like five more that I thought too could have probably gone on
Yeah,
there.
you and I could talk about that, but it was just a question of not having time and energy to make it 15. I probably should have, but so it was. That's how good it was. That's how good the selection was. And I left off some good ones that I really liked, partly because I realized, and I'm feeling abashed a bit. I went back and looked at my best director predictions and my best documentary predictions, and I realized that every single one of the documentary nominees is international. There was no American, not one.
I did not realize
So
that, or I
American
didn't put that
Symphony not
together.
getting in, you know, the other US entry would have been maybe still. They're all international. So that aspect of the documentary race has become front and center. So Gaucho could be a very strong contender, even though it's not directed by Americans. These are the guys who did The Truffle Hunters. I looked them up and they're American, which I didn't realize.
You
But
wouldn't think so
it's
from the
set in
Truffle
Argentina.
Hunters.
It's set in cattle country. There's photography of these gauchos, these cowboys on their horses, that is so stunning, and it just shows how the man and the beast, you know, meld in this extraordinarily beautiful way. There's the opening shot is this guy, you're trying to identify what you're looking at, and this guy gets up from sleeping on his horse, and he wakes the horse up. You know, it was beautiful. There's a lot of great stuff in that one. That was like my favorite. And then there was this extraordinary butt moth movie called Nocturnes that I know Kate Erbland also really liked.
Yeah, almost, it's kind of almost like Honeyland. It's sort of like an ambient
You get immersed.
auro-visual experience.
It's and or exactly oral. The sounds are, you're in the jungle, you're in the de deep forest. Where all these moths are attracted to this bright, bright light and settle on this white sheet, and they photograph it, and it's stunning. But there's a message. It's an eco doc, as well. Did you see some good docs? What were your favorites?
I mean, Daughters is hugely moving, and Netflix just bought that one. This is about girls being reunited with their incarcerated fathers for a sort of daddy-daughter dance. This one's very touching, and I feel like this one has some legs. The one that I turned around and sort of came to like was Skywalkers, about the this Russian couple that traverses all the scaffolding and all these skyscrapers, you know, sort of a free climbing method without any gear, just to get like the best possible shot for their social media. It's a little bit cloying to spend time with these people who are a little delusional. But the movie really, it really nicely takes all of their footage and sort of melds it together to tell a cohesive story. Netflix bought this one as well. I mean, Netflix, I think, has four so far, The Greatest Night in Pop, you know, which is about the making of the We Are the World video. And then
They, I think, went in with that. I think they had that to begin with. And they had
And then
power.
Power, yes. And then Ibelin they did buy, which is about the Norwegian Well, we were talking about World
World
of
of
Warcraft
Warcraft. That's
earlier,
why I
and
was
this is
asking.
about
Yeah.
a guy who, after he dies from a neurodegenerative disease, his parents discover that he had this whole secret life in his World of Warcraft RPG playing.
Yeah, that one looks really good. I didn't see that one. So they ignited a really the or reignited the dock market. Netflix. I was at a Netflix event yesterday and talking to Adam Del Deo, who's the head of the Netflix documentary unit, and he was just very bullish. He just said these are movies people are going to want to see, and we wanted to buy them. And you know, why not? In the overall scheme of things, they're not spending an enormous amount, and they have 260 million subscribers. It's a big number. You
Yeah.
know, they can afford to buy some docs to show them.
Yeah. I mean, this year's Sundance, I suppose, similar to last year's and the one before, definitely reiterated its place in the sort of documentary firmament. I mean, we're seeing all of these documentaries getting acquired, but the narrative feature is not quite as much, which is telling, and, interesting nonetheless.
So we love Joni Mitchell, right? And we found out that there's going to be a concert in Los Angeles, and Ryan and my daughter kindly agreed to try to get tickets. What happened, Ryan?
Well, we lost again. Honestly, even the Eras Tour, when I failed to get tickets for that, as I've spoken about before, I at least could have gotten a seat to that. This one, it was like I was
You were on
never,
time, right?
I
You were
was
right
on
on time.
time for the pre-sale. Like I got in there right when it started. It was like you were number 19,000 in the queue. And then like 5 minutes in, basically Ticketmaster sent a little pop-up that was basically just like, forget it. And so I did stay, but it's like by the time I got into the map, there would be these little blue seats and you would tap on them and they would just vanish, disappear. And the ones that I did get were like $900, like in the back. And they just added another date to the show. I'm not even going to try. Like,
No, you're
it's
not.
just, it's, I mean, I think it's already, oh,
No,
actually,
no,
it's
it was
happening in
today.
5 minutes. So it's happening in 5 minutes. So I'll try
Ryan,
again.
I mean, this
I
is a
will.
once in a lifetime
No, I
opportunity.
know. I know. We've got to see her because it's not going to happen again. It's interesting how she's like become sort of like it's like a package deal with Brandi
That's
Carlisle. They are
true.
not
Her
seen
enabler.
anywhere to
Yeah.
apart. That's her enabler. Yeah, she's
But
like in
I
sort of
told you that
captivity with this
story of
person.
how I met Joni, right? She was standing
Yes,
behind me, and I
yes.
had that perception that she wasn't as fragile as I thought. She was solid. I don't know how to explain it to you any other way. She was there, and she was solid. Next week, we're going to talk about expats and feud because I have to catch up. We're still watching True Detective, which we love. I mean, you still love it, right?
Yes, I do. I do. It's getting even better.
It is getting better. I'm really into it. The last episode was directed by Issa Lopez, the showrunner. It was the best one of all. It was extraordinary.
It's leaning more into the
And
supernatural horror, which I appreciate.
Jodie Foster is just eating up the scenery, you know, in a good way.
Well, and we're starting to see why exactly she may not be a Beatles fan. There's that word
There's
again. There's some trauma there.
reality behind it. Okay, we'll
Yeah.
find out. I can't. So anyway, I can't recommend True Detective enough. I'm sure you're all watching it already. And I can't wait to get into Feud. That'll be fun.
Oh, you're gonna have a great time with
I'm going
that.
to talk to Ed Zwick, and I'm reading his hits, flops, and other Hollywood tales. And he is more than any other memoir I've read. I loved the memoir by Ron Shelton about the making of Bull Durham. And the reason I loved that book was that it was as much about baseball, which I love, as it was about him making that movie. And he's a good writer. So he's able to write about it in a way that's really fun. And Zwick has the writing skills, but what he's doing, which is remarkable, is he's unwrapping a lot of the neurotic bullshit, crap, ugly stuff that goes on in Hollywood, and he was the victim of a lot of it. And most directors will not talk about that stuff. They won't admit it. They won't allow themselves to look even for a moment like a victim or a loser, even if they are. So he's unusual, and I'm really enjoying this.
Well, I'm going on vacation in 2 weeks, and so I think I'll take that I'll get a copy and take that with me.
So please stay tuned, because we have a conversation with Roger Durling, the director of the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, who actually has some great stories of some of the people that he has hosted there over the years. It's fun. All right. Enjoy. Welcome to Screen Talk. Roger Durling, the director of the Santa Barbara International Film Festival, which I have been going to for years, decades. I can't even tell you. Since the 80s, probably, I've been going before you got there, even. And my favorite thing is I host the
writer's panel.
The panel. It starts with the script. And it is my favorite thing every year. It's amazing who we get. You get the nominees. Sometimes there's eight people up there, but they're the smartest people in the world. And I always get a huge charge out of it. And it's become popular even at your festival.
It's actually so popular that we're going to be on prime time. We're going to be in the evening. So
God help me. And then I'm going to do a tribute this year with Mark Ruffalo, which I'm excited about, from Portland.
And it's sold out. It's sold out. And I expect the writers panel to be pretty healthily attended as well.
Oh, that's great. That's great. So I've done some great people in the past. I did Viola Davis and Isabelle Huppert and Saoirse Ronan and Adam Driver. So it's you have an amazing lineup every year. And where are you? Explain to us. This is such a great image in front of us.
I'm glad. This is the Riviera Theater. It's run by the Santa Barbara Film Festival year round, and it's an art house. We're currently showing Teacher's Lounge right now, and I program it year round. And we also do Academy screenings up here. We do about 60 of them.
Wow.
So we're busy. We're busy year round. This is our home. We love it. It's Dolby Atmos, Dolby Vision.
So you've given, you've done for Santa Barbara in a way what the Toronto Film Festival did for Toronto. You've built an audience of film lovers.
That's a very nice way of putting it. It was essential for us to do something like this, because it's really hard to build a film festival once a year, you know, for a short period of time. So the best way to cultivate an audience on the following is to have a presence throughout the year. You know, it's not rocket science, but yeah, it takes a lot of effort. It takes a lot of, but we all like you love what you do. I love what I do.
So. Yeah, no, absolutely. So tell me where this festival fits in the awards calendar in the universe and how it works. In other words, you figured it out. You got, how many years ago did you get there?
This is my 22nd edition.
No way. You're making me feel old.
I know. I'm making myself feel old. I've been at it for 23. You will have a better person. You and Ryan will have a better perspective where we fit in the calendar. I mean, we take place after the Oscar nominations are announced, but we have to plan everything before it.
So you go to Telluride every year. Sometimes you celebrate your birthday, I think.
I always celebrate my birthday.
I've been there several times. So you must begin right then.
Sometimes before, because I watch a lot. I actually, this past year, I had seen about 20 films before I got to Telluride. I'd seen quite a lot. So yeah, usually middle of even before, and because you like yourself, I mean, you go to Cannes. I don't go to Cannes, but I study what is happening in Cannes and all the films that are shown there, like Anatomy of a Fall or, you know, Teacher's Lounge, etc. So I start studying what's coming out of there. Not Teacher's Lounge. Perfect Days was it?
Yeah, yeah. Teacher's Lounge was Berlin. But that's so. Did by the time you get to Telluride, have you started to create your lists?
Yeah, correct. I mean, by the time I got to Telluride, we already had, we didn't announce it, but we had Robert Downey Jr. already in place. And
that was a summer movie, Oppenheimer.
That was a summer movie.
And that was an obvious call. He's probably going to win supporting actor, right?
Yeah, it's looking like it. The coronation is going to happen.
I look forward to that. That'll be the Friday night tribute, and I look forward to seeing. I'm going to go to that.
We had the pandemic, and all festivals were struggling. This is the first time, and in our history, our first five events going into the festival are sold out. Opening night, Bradley Cooper, Robert Downey Jr. The Virtuosos, which happens on Saturday night, and then Mark Ruffalo, all in a row, all sold out. It's first
fantastic.
First time in our history. And, you know, it's not a small venue, as you know, it's 2,200 seats.
The Arlington. So, yeah.
So for us to sell 2,200 seats.
Good for you. Good. Yeah. How do you account for it? You've been steadily building the audience and delivering.
Steadily building.
Great events to watch. You've got Leonard Maltin, Pete Hammond. You've got
Anne Thompson.
You've got great people doing the interviews.
Yeah.
I remember my favorite one. I'm going to ask you this. What is your favorite one? My favorite one was Ben Affleck, The Year of Argo. He gave an amazing interview.
Yeah.
That reminded everyone of how smart he was.
There's been quite a few that stand out. I think quality wise for me, Daniel Day-Lewis and Scott Feinberg, because we all understood the rarity of the event.
This was Lincoln,
yeah. And then, you know, I had wanted him to be at the festival for years. I wanted him the year of There Will Be Blood, but he, you know, the idea of 90 minutes on stage talking about his craft was not in, you know, it's not something that Daniel Day-Lewis wanted to do. But when he came to Lincoln, I don't know what happened. He acquiesced, and it's a remarkable evening.
Those things online? I mean, can you access them?
We have them all. We have them all on YouTube channel. The majority of them are on YouTube channel, and you can watch them. But Daniel Day-Lewis was remarkable. From a production side, I think nothing will beat James Cameron and Leonard Maltin. And the reason why it was because it was a night at the opera. I don't know if you were there, where everything technically went wrong. And then also
That's the wrong person for everything to go wrong with, right?
And Arnold Schwarzenegger was supposed to give the award, but then his schedule, he was then governor, and then he flew into Santa Barbara and he crashed in the middle of the tribute. His security people said he needs to deliver the award now. And Leonard, poor Leonard and James Cameron are on stage. And then we just like, guys, I came out, I introduced Arnold Schwarzenegger. James and Leonard didn't know what was happening. It was literally like a night at the opera, and it was a lot of fun because of that.
I love that. I remember Bruce Dern was hilarious the year of Nebraska. He was a great storyteller. You know, he just had the whole audience laughing.
Absolutely.
I don't know if you saw that one.
You see them all. I watch, you know, I'm producing, so I'm supposed to be looking out and also putting out fires. Like the year that we honored Mickey Rourke, and he wanted to have a smoke at every break. And then
what kind of smoke?
No, cigarettes. And then the stage manager was adamant that, you know, that this was a fire hazard. Now, the funny thing is that I would go backstage to talk to the stage manager. He had a lit cigarette backstage and said, nobody should be smoking in this theater. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we you and Pete and Leonard and I and Scott Feinberg should write a book about the shenanigans backstage. You had a situation where, you know,
I was supposed to do Adam Driver with Scarlett Johansson, and she bailed. And amid rumors that they didn't get along, right?
The official story was that she was ill because she was at the Rosewood Miramar. And remember, that was the year of COVID. We didn't know that it was COVID. And she got, I forget what was the phrase that they told me, the official story that she got violently ill. But no, I actually believe that she was willing
she was
and able.
Sick.
She was just sick. Yeah.
So but you know what? Adam Driver was a real gentleman. He was delightful and helpful and lovely, and we got through it. It was fine.
But I don't ever want to go through that situation again where, you know, it was sold out. We had 2,200 people. And remember, I'm the one that had to come out and tell the audience that Scarlett wasn't here. And I just said, hey, I have good news. I have bad news. The bad news is we don't have Scarlett, but the good news, Adam Driver. And then all of a sudden, the audience just
went for it.
They went for it.
That's a great audience, by the way. You know,
it is a fun audience. It is
and
a good
audience. I love the audience that comes to the writer's panel. They're very devoted. So one of my favorite things you do is you collect the directors every year.
Yes.
We're all wondering which directors you're going to get. This year,
my
favorite year was Barry Jenkins. It was the year of Moonlight versus La La Land, right? Barry Jenkins, Ava DuVernay, Kenneth Lonergan, Damien Chazelle, and Denis Villeneuve.
That was a fantastic. That was a really amazing. And to listen to them, though, that one I actually recently watched it coincidentally. And it was fascinating to listen them to listen them all talk. Yeah, last year for the writers, we had all 10, if you recall. And the Arlington was the perfect venue for it because it was, you know, so wide and we could fit them all in across the state.
Now that one's always, but do you know who your directors are? Yeah.
Not yet. We're working on it. There's some scheduling issues, which is they're always all willing to come up. It's just the scheduling.
So what day is the director's panel?
It's the nominee luncheon. So it's Monday.
Oh, and it's at night?
It's at night. It's at night. And that's
so they would have to schlep up.
It's like you get one, but then the other one cannot be there. So
avoiding Saturday night because that's the DGA. That's why we
moved
the writer's panel. Directors are writers this year.
Exactly. But we have traditionally we do the virtuosos on Saturday night. And this year is spectacular.
Coleman Domingo.
We got Lily Gladstone. We got Divine Joy Randolph. We got Danielle Brooks, America Ferrera.
Who got nominated?
Amazing.
Yeah.
Usually we get a lot of the nominees in the virtuosos and then or people that deserve to have been, you know, part of the awards conversation, like Andrew Scott.
Right.
And Charles Melton.
Charles Melton. Well, Andrew Scott especially was one where I was really sad that he didn't. I could tell that all of us strangers simply wasn't. Why didn't that movie connect?
I think the homosexual aspect of it. I remember at Telluride that there was an audience that was not into it. I heard some graphic things why they didn't like it, why they couldn't stand. I think the sex scene was a little too graphic for them, which when you watch it,
lovely.
You
didn't see.
Yeah, I think the intimacy of it is it's intense, you know, it's visceral. So I think that certain audience is uncomfortable watching that.
Yeah. So do people ever drop out when they don't get nominated? Do they say, okay?
We've never had that. They stick around. I mean, I think they're sports. I mean, a couple of years ago, Taron Egerton had won the Golden Globe and for Rocket Man, and he came and he was a great sport. You know, he said, "I'm here to celebrate," and it was a good run. And we always. I mean, Katrina Balf is an example that she didn't get nominated, and she showed up.
Belfast, right?
In Belfast, right. Yeah. They all we rarely have somebody drop out because they didn't get nominated. It's still, you know, they did a great job, and you know, let's celebrate what they did.
So how many Academy members live in the greater Santa Barbara area?
That we account, that are registered in Santa Barbara, we have 167 Academy members, give or take. But then keep in mind that a lot of people have second homes here in Santa Barbara.
That's right.
That are not registered here. And they're prominent Academy members, but they're registering, you know, Malibu or Los Angeles, et cetera.
So it's more.
So when we do the Academy screenings here year round, we widen the net, and we used to invite solely the people in Santa Barbara, but then we just widened the net. We do a wider invite, and yeah, we get random people that we didn't know that had a home here in Santa Barbara. But
Some of the locals that you have include Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges. We have Michael Keaton. We have Gwyneth Paltrow, Natalie Portman. Kevin Costner. Yeah, Ellen DeGeneres. Oprah. The list goes on. Yeah, you don't know.
The Royals. We got the Royals.
Okay, although they tend to keep to themselves.
They've never showed up at the festival.
I did attend. Netflix did a screening for Academy members at a private home of a doc that was nominated, the After. And then Meghan Markle did the Q&A after the screening.
Well, that's cool.
So
that would have been with David Oyelowo, right?
Correct. Yeah, and the director, and she did a fantastic job. I was very impressed with her. Yeah, with her moderation. Yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward. I'll see you soon. Is there anything else you want to tell us about?
I think the one aspect that people don't know about us is our educational programs that are really strong and happen throughout the year. And in particular during the festival, for example, 4,000 third graders get to experience movies throughout the day of the festival, and we buzz them in. And last year, Guillermo del Toro did a master class with the third graders. This year is Chris Miller and Phil Lord. And they've come with almost all of his films, and they'll be doing a master class with the kids after the screening of Spider-Man. And then Pete Docter also will be coming with Elemental. And then we go to the classrooms and we give them a study guide and we prep them, and they come, and all the questions that the filmmakers answer, last year Guillermo del Toro answered questions, they come directly from the kids. And they're remarkable. And like that, we have programs for different ages. We fly in 30 kids from across the country to experience the film festival, and we do a curriculum for them. And that to me, Anne, is the most rewarding thing we do. Having a sold out Robert Downey Jr. is what pays for all this other programs.
That's good. And also the year-round support that you're giving to cinema. But I was going to say, you have a festival too. You have a real film festival with an opening night and programming for how many days? 11?
It's 11 days, and we have about 200 movies. We have 8 venues, and they all are running simultaneously. Every night that you're up on stage with Mark Ruffalo, there is about 8 movies playing at the same time. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people come up for that. People come up
A
for
lot of
that.
people, and not just from Southern California. We get a lot of people running away from the cold weather on the East Coast, and yeah, we
Making
have
a vacation out of it.
out of and they're cinephiles, and we have nice weather here in compare. We have a big group that comes from Boston. We have actually I'm fond of particular of this group, 25 people that come from Princeton every year to watch movies and be with us.
I love it. Well, thanks for doing all of this, Roger. You really are inspirational, and I'll see you in person real soon.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's a huge honor to have me today. And too bad that Ryan is not here because I listen to you guys fervently. So,
All right. See you soon. Bye.
ciao. Thank you.